Seeing no one else, we'll move to agenda item 16.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is actually going to be we're going to have three items taken together, item 16, 17, and 25. Thank you. Because 25 has to do with the basin plan resolution to eliminate the sections of the basin plan that would be replaced by proposed actions in 16 and 17 and get rid of some resolutions that are passe. And Sheila Soderberg and Hector Hernandez, among others, have worked on this project for quite some time. And we did have this on consent, but we've had some cards turned in, so why don't you give us a thumbnail sketch of where we are, and it would be especially helpful since we had a late supplemental sheet Wednesday night to summarize that a bit as well. Nope.
There you go. Hello, Chairman. Good afternoon, or close to being evening. And members of the board, my name is Hector Hernandez, and I am a staff engineer for the Water Board. I am responsible, along with Sheila, for drafting these three proposed items, items number 16, 17, and 25. As Mr. Roger Briggs mentioned, we had these items on the consent calendar. We received some comments addressing some concerns from a couple members of the public, specifically Mr. David White and Mr. Tom Gibbons. Both of these members, I understand, have turned in cards, so they will provide testimony and voice their concerns directly to the board. Staff has addressed or attempted to address Mr. White's concerns specifically in supplemental sheet number 17 concerning item 17. I believe there's also a supplemental sheet to item 16, but that one is not very detailed. Additionally, staff received an email correspondence and then followed with a hard copy letter from Mr. David White concerning issues he has with reused material or petroleum impacted materials being used in a residential setting. Staff responded to those issues specifically in very much detail. I believe a copy of that letter was placed in each of your folders for your review. And anyhow, those issues are addressed in there fully. Mr. David White's concerns, we believe, address primarily the issue of past practices of decommissioning active oil field facilities, not doing the appropriate characterization, assessment, or cleanup, and then placing or constructing residential areas on top of those properties. That's a very serious issue, which we sympathize with in this particular case with Mr. White. However, I would like to point out that the proposed orders, the proposed waivers, number 16 and 17, specifically apply to active oil field facilities only. We believe that the responses we've provided Mr. White, both in over the telephone, a meeting we had with him, and in writing, have addressed his concerns adequately. We've made it very clear that these orders are not intended to apply to any residential setting. We're currently working with the County of Santa Barbara to address the situation that related to his specific concerns at the residential setting that he will mention in a couple of minutes when he speaks. So with that in mind, staff is open to available to answer any questions, address any concerns that may be that may come from the public or the Water Board members.
The only thing I'd like to add is that we have received numerous comments, actually, not only just Hector and I through time, but there have been three additional Water Board staff ever since the beneficial reuse program was suspended in 2002. There have been a number of staff that have worked on this trying to get another beneficial reuse program in place for the reuse of these materials. With regard to the waste pile management facilities, or I should say waste pile treatment facilities, we have never as a board regulated those facilities prior to that. This proposed regulation is actually to be able to provide more input than what we have had before in terms of protecting water quality. With that said, however, for example, in Santa Barbara County, Santa Barbara County Energy Division, or through Building and Planning, as well as Santa Barbara County Protection Services Division, through the Fire Department, have been very active in regulating those oil field facilities in Santa Barbara County.
Sheila, could you pull the mic closer?
Sure. With that said, we, you know, obviously we would like to address and respond to the comments that we have from the people that are here today. So we're available to do that, as well as answer any of the board's questions. But based on the information we've received, we would like the board to adopt the CEQA documents, the resolutions, as well as the two orders, and, of course, later on the Basin Plan Amendment as well when that issue is taken up.
Okay,
I actually have a question for Sheila. We talked earlier today about changing the definition of owner. Are you going to address that?
Yes, actually, probably should. A comment came up last night that when we talk about a property owner, turns out when you talk about these oil field leases, and we would like to add this definition to the actual both of the orders. This would apply to when we talk about notifying property owners, as well as later on when property owners need to take over the responsibility of these reuse materials or work with the actual oil company or producer to dispose of these materials, that we would like to basically say that this property owner is not only the mineral rights owner, but mainly the surface owner. Turns out with these oil field leases, you can actually have two separate owners, one particularly for mineral rights and the other for surface. The surface facility.
Is there a specific place for that change?
Yes.
Actually, there are numerous places.
It's actually the first one, I believe, is under the draft attachment A.
Yeah, I believe we can do that in attachment A, which is the outline of the conditions. There is a specific definition for some of the terms in the order, so I believe we can either add this definition to make it clear that this is, as Sheila mentioned, or in the I believe in the main order, Sheila, at the end of the main order, there's a section for definition of terms. It's not titled, but there are definitions of terms defined at the end of that section where we can do that.
Okay.
So you're defining whether the term landowner or owners used, you're defining that as surface owner and mineral rights owner, or just surface owner?
We could do both. That I don't think by having the producers notify either one, in some cases the producer themselves are the mineral rights owner. So that, in a sense, would be done. It was for those more rare situations where there is a difference, where the surface rights owner is different.
So you're suggesting both?
Yes, and then there would not be any reason for interpretation.
Okay, and in item number... In the beneficial reuse one, the second one, there's a provision about decommissioning on page 3 of attachment A, number 6. It says that reuse materials have to be removed on decommissioning or they may be left in place, provided that the property owner agrees to accept all future liability. And should that refer to both or just the surface rights owner?
I would say both. Or however as you recommend. Theoretically, the beneficial reuse materials would be applied to the surface and not buried. So perhaps a surface rights owner is more appropriate.
Yeah, if the mineral rights, well. Yeah, I think it should be the surface rights owner. And then finally, in the definition of discharger for both orders defines the discharger as the landowner or the operator. Did you want to change that?
Yes, I agree with that.
You don't want to change it?
No, I believe we can do that.
Well, yeah, you can do it, but is that what staff is recommending, to leave it that way?
Yes.
Actually, on draft, let's see, this would be item number 17, page 7 of the actual draft order, the conditional general conditional waiver of waste discharge requirements. Number 13, towards the very end, actually says discharger means the landowner or operator of the reuse projects.
Right.
We can do a global search throughout all.
Well, no, I've already flagged all the instances of owner, but that's my, and there's provisions in here for transfers of ownership and notification, the permit's not or the waiver's not transferable. But the question is, when we talked this morning, I thought that you were just going to include the discharger as being the operator.
Yes, the discharger would be the operator, but in terms of the final decommissioning, if the reuse materials were no longer going to, if the reuse materials were not being removed from the property, then the landowner would have to take over the liability for the maintenance of that particular road project or whatever it is.
Okay, but even before that, the definition of the discharger in both of these is owner or operator, and so I'm asking, do you want to leave it that way, or before the decommissioning, is it just the operator?
Well, I think we can clarify that and say before decommissioning, it's the operator, and during decommissioning, it's the landowner.
Well, I don't think you could do it that way, because at that point, you'd have to transfer the waiver. If it's going to be left in place and after the owner accepts responsibility. But
well, Laurie, legally both the operator and landowner are responsible, aren't they?
Right.
So I think we should leave both.
Okay, if that's staff's recommendation. We don't always include both. In the ag waiver and the timber waiver, we did.
I think we should try to be consistent with previous waivers that have been adopted.
Okay.
Any other clarifications, corrections, changes?
No. All the other clarifications and corrections were made or are outlined in the supplemental sheet to item number 17. We made some changes in response to the comments received from Mr. David White, and those are outlined on there. One that you may want to pay close attention to is the change we made to item number 17, specification B5 on page 3. We changed the wording on that specification to say that well, let me just read this to you. Prior to receiving Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, or acronym is DOGGR, approval of lease fee decommissioning, the discharger shall remove all reuse materials or may leave them in place, provided that the property owner agrees in writing. And I think that's an important change because there are some concerns with leaving the material in place, and our thought with this, the objective with these reuse projects is that when the project's complete and the facility gets ready to decommission, the roads have to be removed completely. All these reuse material must be removed unless the property owner agrees to keep them.
That was number six, I think, not number five.
Sorry about that.
All righty.
Yeah, I'm reading off the supplemental sheet. We may have gotten the.
Yep, that's what I'm checking.
Okay, so time to go to the comments now?
Yes.
Okay.
Before we do that, a question for you. You had three public workshops.
Yes.
Where were they?
This room.
All in this room?
Yes.
I noticed that there were no representatives from Monterey County or San Luis Obispo County. And although we do, in Salinas, I think there is some areas for these facilities.
San Ardo
oil field.
Any reason why Monterey County didn't feel the need to come?
No, I'm not quite sure, because even as part of the CEQA process, we sent out all the materials, because actually these orders were originally thought to show up in May, and then they were going to show up in July, and so now obviously we're here in September, but we've done the sequence, you know, basically the CEQA noticing, and we've sent out letters to all the interested parties, but we have never received any formal comments from either of those two county representatives.
We don't bury anything in Monterey County.
Just let it. It just rots up on the surface.
Yeah, it just floats up to the top.
Well, I noticed you sent something to Monterey County clerk.
Yes.
And now you're telling me that there's been just no response or participation. So
why did you send it to them instead of the Environmental Health?
No, the county clerk, that's in relation to the CEQA documents.
Okay.
The CEQA documents are sent to all the county recorder's office or county clerks and some of these other state agencies.
In addition, we put in newspaper articles with the Monterey, I think it's the Monterey.
Financial Herald.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The Santa Maria Times, the local one for San Luis County, the Tribune. So it is very odd that we have had not response. And also I might add, historically, when the beneficial reuse program was in place from 76 to 2002, when it was in operation, Santa Barbara County as a whole has been very active in oil fields decommissioning. I believe that, and we actually have an interagency agreement with County Protection Services Division. I know in the past, previous folks have tried to approach the other county's environmental health, and even at that point in time, they were not very interested, or at least I've never seen anything in the files that have shown that anybody wanted to have an interagency agreement similar to what we had in 98. So I think our charge, too, since we are trying to start up this program again, though in a very limited scope compared to what the previous program had, and also regulate these waste pile facilities, which we had never done before, we would like to approach, just as, you know, we've spoken to Santa Barbara County and Division of Oil and Gas, we'd also like to approach these other two county environmental healths representatives and actually seek them out to come into an agreement as well. I don't know whether it's a resource issue with them. I do know, for example, when there was the PXP recent expansion project here in the Arroyo Grande area, Pismo Beach, that San Luis Obispo County Environmental Health was involved as well as building and planning. So I don't know where exactly where they decide to have an active oversight or where they don't.
Seems like a kind of a big issue to me, because we need the local agencies to do the enforcement, right, and
right.
follow-up. We need an MOU with them.
Right.
And now they're going to be coming in after the fact and, you know, have not had a chance or not avail themselves of the opportunity to
yeah.
participate at this point in time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just hope it, you know, doesn't become problematic. But it is what it is, and you're going to have to make a concerted effort to get them on board with this. Now, I take it this was one of those waivers that expired?
Yes.
With that whole group of 24 or something like that? And
yes.
We're just picking up some of the pieces, and this is one of those obscure waivers.
Exactly,
yeah.
And that's why the Basin Plan Amendment is there, basically
right.
to just kind of clean off the books that we have. It's more of a clerical action
right.
to clean up the Basin Plan.
Okay. All right. Should we go to...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Shallcross.
I'm just wondering if a letter from the board to the Board of Supervisors, you know, sort of explaining that, you know, there was this opportunity, and we certainly hope that in the future you sort of get with the program. Sort of light a fire under them. I mean, rather
yeah.
than having, you know, if there's recalcitrant staff on the other side, or people who just don't realize the importance of it, sort of, you know, ratchet it up a little bit.
And we can do that. And in their defense, too, in terms of how many leases there are in the Monterey
yeah.
kind of shared in the San Luis County, I think there's only three, and we have some oil industry representatives here today,
yeah.
but I think there's only three primary operators compared to probably the, you know, 30-plus
right.
operators in Santa Barbara County.
But still, we want them to get to do it.
Well, I think if you send it to the chair of the Board of Supervisors, which happens to be his district that oil field sits in.
Well, that's what I'm worried about. Maybe she
should
send it to
his
all
attention.
The Board of Supervisors.
We can do that.
Okay. Well, I think staff should send a letter. And then also, any facilities in SLO County?
Price Canyon.
Price Canyon, okay.
Price
so
Canyon.
We do the same thing there.
Okay. Yeah, and I know there have been folks from PXP, which I believe are the
okay.
the probably the largest producer. They have participated in the workshops.
Right. All right. Let's go to our speakers. Christy Trier, Thomas Gibbons, Bob Poole.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Christy Truer with Santa Barbara County Fire, and I've been asked to read a letter of comment that has been sent to the board from Santa Barbara County Planning and Development Petroleum Office. And I'll be real brief with it and try and be as specific as I can. The letter is regarding Santa Barbara County Petroleum Office comments to order R32005-006 and R32005-005. Honorable members of the Water Board, thank you for the opportunity to be involved in the process of drafting the above referenced documents. The Santa Barbara County Petroleum Office has had the pleasure to work with the regional board staff concerning petroleum-related issues in Santa Barbara County for over 30 years. We would like to take this opportunity to thank both Hector Hernandez and Sheila Soderberg for their efforts to put the waivers together. Their efforts and knowledgeable expertise have made this a smooth and comprehensive process. The Santa Barbara County Petroleum Office is in full support of the waivers. We would like to add that we look forward to participating in the IAA with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. Sincerely, Deanna Lewatsky, Santa Barbara County Petroleum Office. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Mr. Gibbons? Followed by Bob Poole and then David White.
Good afternoon, members of the board. Mr. Briggs, staff. For purposes of organization, we're lumping 25, 17, and 16 together.
Correct.
25, I agree that this body should repeal 73-5. It's a little antiquated. Times have changed. I think someone said in the room earlier today, times have changed. It was good in the 70s, and It was somewhat motivated and modified in the 80s because of some increased activity, and it served its purpose. It's time to eliminate it. I personally agree with 16. It is our duty as a society to allow people that generate waste material to collect it, characterize it, manage it in a responsible manner. Because of the lack of 16 being implemented, many, many piles of waste that would be used otherwise has accumulated in the region. And just as a matter of good business, I think 16 should be implemented. The only issue that I have, or the only concern, would be one that plagued the entire process: resources. Santa Barbara County, which I have a little experience with because I live there and I've worked in this industry since 1969, so I'm new at it, but the problem has been a lack of resources. We have people that have caseloads of possibly hundreds of cases to deal with. So whether you're planning on allocating some of your staff time or some of your budget to help, I think that's something that collectively, through the interagency agreement, needs to be put together. That's something to really look forward to. Item 17, beneficial reuse has been a benefit to a lot of people. I've practiced beneficial reuse. I think beneficial reuse in its own right, used in the right place, is the right thing to do. One of the things that becomes a big rub, and I'm going to go right to the end of beneficial reuse, is when land use changes. And some parties that haven't been part of this process, be it Monterey County, San Luis, Santa Barbara County, is the land use agencies. And in Santa Barbara County, Santa Barbara County Planning and Development, who I personally don't really get along with real well, should have been involved in this process. They handle zoning changes, land use changes, and they're an integral part of this. One of their subdivisions, the petroleum division, has been involved all along, and they were an integral part of the development of the interagency agreement in 1998. Energy division doesn't have a lot of value here because energy division's area is in the coastal zone, not in the inland area. The threshold, as you know, in the coastal zone are much, much different. So that's where the big rub is when the land use changes. And when oil companies own property in fee, where they own the surface and the subsurface, they have to build roads. And they need to operate, and they need to operate 24 hours a day. If they can't get around the leases, they can't control their runoff. I mean, it makes good sense to allow them to continue building roads. The characterization of the material, if the facilities back in item 16 are built correctly, and I can tell you it's worth looking at the facilities that exist in 5C in the Bakersfield area. Those are some of the finest soil management facilities that exist in our state. And they characterize the material correctly. They control all their run-on and run-off. But that's a good model. So that's something we need to look at. In a majority, most of the E&P operators are good operators. And like anything, you're going to find operators that don't operate up to everyone's standard.
Could you wrap it up, Mr. Givens?
Yes, sir. I was planning on 9 minutes for three items, 3 minutes apiece, but I'll wrap it up rather quickly.
Yeah, because staff really bundled all these three together into one presentation, so we're going to give everyone 3 minutes. Go ahead. If you could wrap it up, I would appreciate it.
Yes, sir, I will.
Thank you.
Most E&P operators, exploration and production operators, are very responsible. And one of the things that I don't see in this program is And I'm going to call a little education before you do enforcement. Because if you don't bring everyone up to the same standard and inform them, it's almost impossible to enforce. And that would be the end of my comment. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Bob Poole.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak, Mr. Chair, members of the board, Mr. Briggs. My name is Bob Poole. I'm with the Western States Petroleum Association, and I'm here in support of items 16, 17, and obviously 25. What is before you today represents the culmination of 3 years of extensive collaborative and thorough process among local, regional, state agencies, industry, and the general public. On behalf of industry, I want to specifically acknowledge the hard work of the California Department of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, the County of Santa Barbara, both the Petroleum Office and the Protective Services Division, and especially your staff here at the Water Board, Mr. Briggs, Harvey Packard, Sheila Soderberg, and Hector Hernandez. These conditional waivers create comprehensive regulations that ensure compliance in protecting the waters of the state and provide industry with a workable program that they can enroll in which increases both oversight potential and the opportunity for landfill diversion in an environmentally sound and protective manner for these materials. The reestablishment of this program for the reuse of these materials within existing oil fields is critical in maintaining roads for ongoing regulatory and operational access, in addition to the construction of berms and other applications. I'd like to reinforce a couple of key points quickly with regard to the items before you today. They involve only active oil field properties. They do not permit placement of these materials for disposal purposes. These materials are non-hazardous crude oil impacted soils, which must still undergo stringent chemical characterizations before they can qualify for reuse. The final report of Cal EPA's Road Mix Working Group, made up of industry representatives and 12 state and federal agencies, a copy of which is in your staff report, concluded there is no evidence of non-hazardous road mix contributing to or being implicated in environmental problems, and they point to the beneficial use of road mix as it contributes to the reduction of road dust and PM10, and it enables all-weather access to remote sites for vehicles. And lastly, the ongoing interagency regulatory oversight is an important component of this program. In addition, as was mentioned in the supplemental information you were provided, we want to continue the cooperative and collaborative public-private working partnership developed during this process by helping to establish an ongoing coastal oil and gas work group similar to the one that exists in the Central Valley. This new work group will provide a regular forum for the discussion of regulatory and operational updates of oil field issues. In closing, industry is prepared also to work with the various agencies to create training information. I know Mr. Gibbons made that point on good and workmanlike construction standards as determined by oversight agency inspections for those wanting to enroll in this program to understand what it is and what it isn't. And we offer our help in drafting report of waste discharge templates to help those who wish to apply for the waivers. Again, thank you for this opportunity. And should you have any questions of a technical nature, we do have representatives here to respond.
Okay, thank you. Any idea where Monterey County and Slo County have been in this process? I mean, has your association had any contact with those?
No, I have. Obviously, our members, Chevron and Air in particular, are the ones operating the San Ardo fields there in Monterey. I know they have regular contact with them. But as far as this process, they've been noticed all through the process. I really don't know either.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. David White, followed by Gordon Hensley, and then then Andrew Christie.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is David White. I'm a resident of Santa Maria. I'd like to beg your indulgence with regard to the time, because as Mr. Gibbons said, you have three separate agenda items in 25, 17, and 16, and they have a packet of similarity, but at the same time there are some issues that really do need some addressing. I have no problem whatsoever with the concepts in 16 and support the facilities there. 25, I also agree that those regulations do need to be reviewed and updated, and I believe that that's an appropriate thing to do. I would also like to thank the staff that has been so helpful in getting the information to me, responding to my comments, especially Mr. Briggs, Sheila, and Hector. And I would also like to acknowledge that the seeming late minute addition of this item to the agenda, rather than being a consent item, was not an intention of mine at all. I do believe, having participated in the first of the three workshops, that a number of items that were vocalized in that workshop never made it to the documents that I was able to review, and I never actually heard or was invited to the second or third workshop, so I don't understand how that breakdown happened. I do understand, having discussed recently with Sheila and by email with Hector, that this beneficial reuse program under item 17 is actually regarding materials that are in active oil fields. I understand that. The historic difficulty has been that active today doesn't mean active tomorrow, and that beneficial reuse that has been authorized in the past has not always been remediated. It's in my subdivision in Harvest Ranch on the former Galveston Fee property, which 15 years ago was active oil field. So I think we need to take a longer-term perspective that these materials, if they are not removed, if they are not remediated, represent an ongoing potential impact to water resources. It may be a minor impact. It may be that they're underneath paved surfaces, and in that case, there may be some mitigation already provided. But if these materials are not removed from the site, there needs to be a clear set of documentation as to where those materials are placed, the kind of characterization that has been performed and Mr. Poole has discussed is appropriate. In fact, perhaps maybe even more, to ensure that it's not a case of the operator providing materials in terms of documentation which might actually be in their favor and less in the public's. Because if those materials never leave the site, future landowners for a long time could potentially be impacted. I would hate to see anyone else facing the kinds of issues that we have had with oil field waste materials on properties that we bought without disclosure. That's the crux issue here. I believe that an adequate monitoring system and documentation through a graphical information system would be the ideal mechanism to alleviate any issues at all with future use of beneficial reuse materials. I think that that can be accomplished. I've discussed that with Sheila at great length, and I believe that that's a workable solution that could allow us to go into the future reusing these materials as necessary during the operational life of the oil fields, and making sure that future landowners, if there ever is a change in land use, don't run into the same kind of problems that we've experienced in Santa Barbara County. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Sheila.
Any questions?
Any questions from the board? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hensley, hang on 1 second while I just check in with Sheila. And so, is this completely a land use planning issue? And what is our staff's approach to kind of putting, you know, future property owners on notice that this type of land use activity occurred?
We actually discussed amongst us what is the best way to do this. Is it best to actually put in the order a requirement for a deed restriction? Because right now we have it as a choice. Basically, when the oil field is being decommissioned, the reuse material is removed, or the property owner takes over the liability for the management and the responsibility. And that property owner is ultimately responsible for their property. We could, at that point, we actually discussed, do we need to actually require deed restriction language be placed? The thing that came up to us, though, we didn't know if we were the appropriate agency to require that or not. Typically, when these oil fields are decommissioned, and this is something I wanted to point out, too, for example, when Division of Oil and Gas does not give final lease restoration letters, it turns out the actual Santa Barbara County Fire Protection, in this case, gives final lease restoration approval. So theoretically, and so in other words, the Division of Oil and Gas gives final letters for each well, not necessarily each lease. So again, it kind of goes back to the county as to what is their process, and it obviously sounds like the process did not work for the Park Villa 2 folks. And we can see, by reviewing just what little knowledge we have of that incident, we can see where it had slipped under the radar, if you will, because the 1998 agreement, even though that was in with the interagency agreement with Santa Barbara County, was in place. However, that oil field had officially been decommissioned in the 1970s. So it never would have even come up as, you know, fallen under that interagency agreement. And obviously, I don't know if we're really, I think we're only part of the issue. You know, there's other agencies where the city, the county, there has to be some more of a unified process, because our mission has been more to protect water quality. And a lot of times these reuse materials, which the primary issue is erosion control to protect water quality, see the dilemma. So we wondered even if it was appropriate to put this deed restriction language as a requirement in the order if these materials remain.
And what did you conclude?
Our recommendation is to not put a deed restriction on any, or require a deed restriction for any of these. We believe that these reuse projects present a very low risk to water quality. So from a water quality perspective, we don't see any need for doing that. The final decision to place any restrictions on land use in the event that these properties change, if there is a change to the land use, would be from a human health and ecological perspective, which are responsibilities that, even though we would likely have some input, those decisions would not be under the Water Board's jurisdiction for the most part.
So it would be the individual county's land use agency.
Exactly.
To make a decision whether they wanted to do anything about this. But I can see that the nexus to water quality is going to be low, otherwise we wouldn't permit the reuse of these materials to begin with.
Exactly, and that's the primary reason that these are waivers.
Right.
These are waivers because these are very low-threat projects from a water quality perspective. And as explained in the staff report, also from a human health perspective.
Right. And as Harvey just mentioned, is that in the order itself, if it's part of the decommissioning process for that oil field, we require the beneficial reuse materials to be removed. So again, it's put back that property owner has to accept the responsibility to have these materials remain on their property.
And the issue of tracking where these materials are placed, it's in place in the proposed orders. We require the manner in which a discharger proposes a project is they submit a report of waste discharge, which details to us what exactly it is that their project is, what characterization they're proposing, what is the location. There's a requirement for submitting a map, a location map, of where this project is going to occur. So there is a tracking mechanism in place for these projects. I guess I don't know.
Okay.
What else to say about that?
I don't think there is anything else to say about it from our perspective, from the board's perspective. We've got a few more speaker cards. Let's see what other issues arise. Mr. Hensley, and finally, Andrew Christie.
Chairman Young, Honorable Board, staff, Gordon Hensley, I'm the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper and a member of the California Coast Keeper Alliance. We are urging that you reject the staff recommendation for the discharge waiver and that you not adopt the negative declaration. We find no real reason presented in the staff report that complies with the Clean Water Act standards for proposing the waiver, and we are wondering why a waiver is necessary. Some of our specific concerns are that The discharge to surface water is prohibited under the Clean Water Act, and specifically I'd like to call your attention to attachment number 3, page 2, item number 7. Pursuant to Clean Water Act Section 13269, waivers may be granted for discharges to land and may not be granted for point source discharges to surface waters or conveyances thereto. We believe that a waste pile is indeed a point source, and we think that that particular section applies in particular. In addition, on page 3, number 9, the relevant factors in determining whether a waiver is in the public interest include the following, and there are 4 items there, and we believe that the relevant factors do not apply specifically to items number C and D. They're especially not satisfied by this waiver program. Nor do we find in the staff report where it purports that it indeed does. And, you know, perhaps staff can point that out. It's clear from the facts presented in the staff report that the reason that we are heading down this waiver path is because of strong opposition by the industry, and you'll find that in your staff report on page 11 at the bottom of the list of folks contacted. Based on extensive comments and strong industry opposition to the conditions and regulatory structure proposed in the first draft version of the proposed general order, Water Board staff determined it appropriate to restructure, revise, move on to the waiver. We are not satisfied with that. We believe this proposal is likely to fail to satisfy the Clean Water Act standards. We have additional concerns. There is no annual fee in this program. There are no samples required, only observations. You will find that in Attachment 5, the monitoring reporting program. And additionally, we are concerned that California Coastkeeper underwent a study in the LA area of a similar waiver proposal. And in that study, we found a 98% non-compliance with this type of waiver program. In that particular case, we were looking at metals. Copper, lead, and zinc went underreported. We believe that this demonstrated failure makes heading down this path very precarious in protection of clean water. In conclusion, we believe a waiver is inappropriate, will not provide protection in compliance with the Clean Water Act standards, and cannot be issued. I urge your board not to adopt the negative declaration and to require waste discharge requirements instead, and reject the waiver proposal. If you believe you cannot go there, at a minimum, I ask that you would direct a more complete EIR and continue this approval until you can review a more complete environmental evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I address the Clean Water Act standards and issues? This waiver, these waivers don't authorize any point source discharges. If an industrial stormwater permit is also required for these facilities, they still need to get one. This doesn't waive that requirement. These are discharges to land. They're not point source discharges. And in terms of a waste pile being a point source, I'd be interested to know what the authority for that is. There is some authority in the mining context that tailings piles may be point sources, but that's because they're huge piles and they actually collect and channelize water and direct it to surface water, which is the definition of a point source. It's a conveyance that collects and channelizes water. My understanding is that these waste piles don't do that, and any erosion would just be the washing off of the waste piles themselves. And to the extent that they're subject to the stormwater requirements, those would be permitted under the stormwater program.
Can I add to that?
Yes.
The objective of the waste piles is to not allow any runoff from the facility. Everything has to be contained within the facility. We as regional board staff have to make sure that the proposed construction plan and management plan for the individual waste pile facilities is such that there is no runoff coming from the facility. Now, there is a possibility that runoff or erosion could occur in a major storm event or something like an El Nino year or something like that, but we do have provisions in place in the monitoring program that specify that at discretion of the executive officer or the water board, we can require surface water monitoring. It all depends on the site-specific conditions for that particular waste pile facility.
I'd also like to add that in actually item 16, draft attachment A, under the waste pile conditions, there's actual specifications where basically the design and construction of containment features and monitoring systems shall be approved by the EO prior to construction, as well, that's item B1, and number 3, the waste pile management facility shall be operated so that no pollutants are discharged to surface water or groundwater. And also the waste pile, continuing on, the waste pile management facility shall be designed, constructed, operated, and maintained such that precipitation falling directly on the waste pile and or treatment processing areas will be contained and managed within the designated waste pile facility boundaries. So I believe actually the monitoring program is sufficient. One other thing to point out is that where are these waste piles coming from to begin with? Well, they're actually from spills on the oil field leases, whether they're right at the wellhead or they're along pipelines. These materials are characterized and then would be brought to this waste pile facility, segregated, which ones stay, which ones could be reused, and which ones go.
Okay, thank you. Andrew Christie, followed by Doug Herthel, and then Pamela Hetherington.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the board. Andrew Christie, Santa Lucia chapter of the Sierra Club. It is good to get permits for piles that have been sitting there for years. It might be a good idea to turn a waste into a product, but this needs further study of the question of how best to go about doing this. This used to go to the Casmelia landfill as toxic waste. The wisdom of the board when you said that the Class 2 disposal was needed was based on the fact of how much we don't know about this product. This is largely unresolved complex mixture. One thing that has been identified is monoaromatics, which we know to be extremely toxic. Monitoring sounds good, but it's simply a matter of once it's spread out, the oil-impacted toothpaste is out of the tube, and it's pretty problematic to go back and scrape it all back together again if you find out there's a surprise or a problem. These should not be going under neg decks. You should acknowledge that you've got a long way to go before you can think of changing the basin plan and simply changing Class 2 waste into beneficial use material by saying it is so. Thank you.
Mr. Christie, don't you think the characterization that they have to go through with this material kind of addresses that issue as to whether it's toxic or not or hazardous or not?
They're testing for what they know to test for, which is simply pretty much the way business is done in most walks of life. I think the best analogy that we're dealing with right now is in genetically engineered foods, where the FDA tests for known allergens of new unknown products, but of course they can't test for unknown allergens, they can't test for unforeseen consequences, but they're really not in a position to say that there won't be any because they simply don't know. We're talking in this instance about components that are toxic down to parts per billion and possibly parts per trillion. Most laboratories simply cannot test down that far. But basically this is 85% unresolved content. So what you're being told is that these are very strict testing procedures they're going through, but what they're testing for is what they know to test for.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Doug Herthel and Pamela Hetherington. Yes, Dr. Hunter.
Can you comment on the characterization that Mr. Christie just gave us, that sorting process would leave 85% unclassed content? So, and essentially, they're 85% of the analysis. Well, how do I ask that question?
It's not characterized? Is that what?
Yeah, I'm trying to understand what that percentage is that he was referring to. Did that speak to you? Did that tell you something?
Okay.
Is he saying that 85% of what's there we may not be able to ever characterize, or we have no way to characterize, or what did he just say?
Actually, Harvey Packard will give an explanation of petroleum hydrocarbons that actually is related to a laboratory analysis of how we actually characterize them. Thank you.
I'm not sure about the percentage that Mr. Christie was talking about. What we're talking about here is crude oil, which is a mixture of hundreds or thousands of different compounds, and we don't have names for all of them. But it's the same. These are the same materials that they've been using in the oil fields ever since they've been producing oil. They've been making roads out of it, out of these oil sands, for 100 years or so. It's nothing new. It's the same material that's in the street right here on Broad Street. We don't know all the components of crude oil, but we do have experience with it. And as has been already said, this stuff is not being released wholesale in environments. In a controlled oil field, the oil fields eventually have to be decommissioned and closed, and they will be. This material will be scooped up and collected back again. That's the whole idea of limiting it to the oil fields.
So I think his point was that's the part of the process that where his concern falls. In other words, that sorting process only addresses 15% of what's there, because we don't really know everything that's in crude. Is that what I heard?
I'm not sure. I didn't follow that.
Okay. Well, there's the 85% number that he threw out, and I'm just trying to put that into context of that sorting process and understanding what impacts we can project for determining beneficial uses, toxic and hazardous materials.
Right. They're making specific structures out of this stuff, either roads or berms, but not something that's placed somewhere and forgotten about. I mean, these are specific structures. They'll be maintained, and the intent is to, you know, as Hector's explained, there is no releases to waters of the United States. There is no discharge.
Okay. If I can add to that also, in terms of characterizing the waste or the material, we can't require characterization of compounds or components of petroleum that we don't know about. I mean, there is an unresolved mixture, and the percentage, I don't know what that is, but it's the same material that's been used, as Harvey said, for decades in the oil field industry. This is supposed to be non-hazardous crude oil impacted soils only. No diluent, no PCBs, no other toxic contaminants.
And so then I'm assuming that when this sorting occurs and these different types of soils are being sequestered, toxic and hazardous materials would trigger a different process. Those things would be disposed of in the proper manner.
Well, there are specific definitions for hazardous waste.
Yeah.
And these wastes are not supposed to be hazardous. If they were hazardous, they would not be allowed to be used for reuse purposes.
But we do screen for it. So there must be cases where this material does carry toxic or hazardous material.
Right. There are numerous processes that occur in the oil field industry,
yeah,
and where some other chemicals are added, and it does trigger them to be hazardous.
Okay.
For example, if this was refined material in any way, what they call the KD or the diluent or gasoline, that would not be allowed for beneficial reuse.
Okay. Mr. Rothel, and then Pam Hetherington.
Good afternoon, Chairman Young, and board members, and staff. I'm Doug Hurthell. I'm the president of POLO. That's the Preservation of Los Olivos. It's a citizen group, nonprofit citizens group. And I apologize for coming in at a late date on this. We just picked it up recently. But I have a letter to read from our board. And basically, our organization, Preservation of Los Olivos, is extremely concerned over these proposed ordinances, which would waive the discharge requirements for the use and handling of petroleum-contaminated soils. We have a number of oil fields that exist in the San Ynez Valley watershed. Oil companies in the Central Coast have had many significant environmental pollution problems, including petroleum contamination issues at Avila and Guadalupe Beach. Controlling the ultimate disposition of oil field waste is extremely important to the public. the use of storage of oil field waste needs to be carefully regulated, and these proposed waivers are far too lenient. Both of these waivers fail to address the problems associated with long-term effects of oil-contaminated soil being left alone in the form of roads, berms, landfills, and stockpiles. This program is now proposed, as now proposed, is an excuse to leave a regulated material on a site indefinitely and essentially on an unregulated basis. The negative declaration for these proposals has listed every category as no impact. In the environmental significance checklist, this is impossible. What about the potential for violation of water quality standards or waste discharge requirements? What about siltation and erosion from on-site or even off-site factors? What about the visual impacts of stockpiled oily dirt? And what about odor and dust control issues? What about conflicts with land use plans and policies set forth by other agencies? Have the local agencies, such as the Protective Services and Grading, commented on the waivers? What about the future economic impacts on property when oil operations are closed out? All of these are potentially significant impacts. The negative declaration is just not sufficient to make a final discussion of these waivers. In addition, it is stated that the action will improve water quality. How will this happen? How can the statement or findings be made that water of the state will not be affected when there is such a lack of engineering controls and monitoring? It appears that there are no TPH or other constituent limits that will regulate or control what material can even be used for this program. What defines an active oil field? Have the property owners around these active oil fields been notified or revised? And I'll close. In closing, these waivers need to be revised with additional controls and restrictions. In addition, a third-party consultant should be used to prepare an EIR so that the impacts can be reasonably assessed. We request that the board instruct the staff to redraft a more comprehensive proposal which will protect the public interest and not simply defray the inevitable for the oil companies. The oil companies have an obligation and responsibility to the public to address these issues now and not in the future or in perpetuity. And it's signed by the board members. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, Pamela Hetherington. And that is our last speaker on this agenda item.
Good evening, board members, Mr. Briggs. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on behalf of the Environmental Center of San Luis Obispo. We have many concerns regarding the Basin Plan Amendment and the Resolutions 16 and 17. The regional board's attempt to reclassify the crude impacted soil from designated Class 2 waste to something essentially inert is troublesome. The Basin Plan used to require that this waste be disposed in a Class 2 landfill. Now you say that these soils can be beneficially reused. What changed in the mix-up of the soils that led to this reclassification? Crude oil production contains chemicals and metals, including methane, hydrosulfide, volatile organic compounds, semi-volatile organic compounds, polynuclear aromatic hydrocarbons, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, bichlorinated biphenyls, and petroleum hydrocarbons. Some of these chemicals are toxic down to parts per trillion. Given the nature of the chemicals involved and the fact that the resolutions are based on a negative declaration of impacts, is further cause for concern. By issuing a negative declaration of environmental impacts, you have failed to address Proposition 65 carcinogens, toxic compounds in the unresolved complex mixture, chronic human health issues, adequate waste soil characterization, waste tracking, or deed restrictions. By calling this non-hazardous waste, you circumvent the fact of the chemicals found in crude oil production that could impact public health. Another area of concern is monitoring. While Santa Barbara County has a fairly good monitoring program, San Luis Obispo County and Monterey County do not. The resolutions give sweeping oversight to the oil producers. If you live in Santa Barbara County, you have the benefit of additional local oversight. You're not so lucky if you live in SLO or Monterey County. How can local citizens achieve local oversight if it's not already in place? Santa Barbara County has a permit compliance program. How do we get a similar program in our county? Perhaps a major oil spill is a key factor in adequate oversight. Along with inadequate monitoring, we also find that the five-year waiver is too long. These proposed changes need to be monitored more closely than is currently recommended. Reuse materials are not innocuous. Examples in Los Angeles and Santa Maria prove these materials can cause human health impacts. What coordination is taking place with public health and environmental health agencies within the scope of monitoring requirements? Staff's response to a request for deed restriction on land that has reused materials puts the onus on human health or ecological risk based on entire oil field assessment. Who will assess these risks? Finally, claims that the current regulations are more stringent than necessarily has not been discussed adequately in the proposed resolutions. Declaring negative impacts on the environment does not make it so. The Regional Board has changed the definition of these once hazardous materials to non-hazardous with inadequate review of environmental impacts. We request that these orders, resolutions, and Basin Plan Amendment go back to the drawing board for proper environmental review. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Sir, I turned the card in. I want to talk if I could.
Okay. And your name, sir?
Mark Onaveras. I gave it to the lady there.
You have his card? You did. Okay. All right. Go ahead, sir. You have 3 minutes.
My name is Mark Onaveras. I'm a farmer and rancher in Santa Maria, and I live in the oil fields. And I want to read this briefly, so bear with me. I favor this waiver, but only if the Water Board staff stays involved and on top of the beneficial use waiver. Santa Barbara County does not have the properly trained manpower to oversee this type of work. The fire department is involved in HazWoper and hazardous waste materials and car wrecks and that type of thing. But I have personal on-hand information to say that it's kind of an afterthought for them to be involved in this oil field type of material we're talking about. I can take you a tour of the Cat Canyon area where I live and where I've worked for 30-some years, and it's apparent that many, if not all, not all, but many of the operators need to be policed, and the county police's the county policies do oversee a lot of this type of work, but evidently they don't have enough teeth to make them behave because there's a lot of them that aren't behaving. A lot of this beneficial use is not being done in the correct manner. The property that I own and most of the Water Board folks have been on can attest to that. The bottom line on this whole deal is that these piles have to have some kind of a resolution there. There's piles stuffed all over Cat Canyon and for several different operators. And at some point, they do have to be disposed of. There's always areas over in the Bakersfield area in the Class 1 hazardous dumps or what have you. There's areas where this stuff can be used on roads and what have you as well. But to just... for the Water Board to get out of this, turn it over to the county and say, okay, here's the ball, run with it. It's not going to happen correctly. Also, some of the piles on sites on these different sites have been there for a number of years, especially since this ordinance is, or these beneficial use thing has been taken out of place. And these piles have obviously been added to over this certain period of time. They all need to be tested to make sure they still are non-hazardous and other things haven't been added to them, which is, there's been several lawsuits in the Santa Maria area that have attested that fact. Some of this stuff was supposedly non-hazardous, and after extensive testing, one come to find out that a lot of people were dumping stuff in there after hours, what have you, that were definitely non-hazardous. The other thing it mentioned in the handout, and some of the old operators had said, it was the proper way to dispose or use this for beneficial use was to use existing materials on site to mix with these oil spills. Well, I, as a property owner in this area and a farmer, don't agree with that at all. Some of this, if these oil companies, operators are going to mix this material up, they need to purchase sand from some of these rock and sand outfits and mix it on with some other type of material rather than the topsoil off properties, which is causing a lot of erosion and a lot of downstream problems as far as water discharge and a lot of other things go. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions from the board?
Yes.
Mr. Shalcross?
A couple of things. Maybe, Sheila, maybe you could just quickly run through, sort of tell me a story of what the problems are. So the petroleum guys lease the property and they get the oil out, and then what happens?
Well, and yeah, part of the issue, like, for example, Mr. Ontiveros' situation, we happen to have been involved with him as well as the previous oil company and the current oil company that's out there. My understanding is he has the surface rights. He signed a lease agreement with these other operators. The operators, unfortunately, have spills. I mean, that's how we have the cleanup unit in the water board, is because we are responding to these spills. So usually we get involved after the fact, if you will, to do these cleanups. I believe in his particular situation, and he's here, obviously, to talk about that, is that sometimes the oil companies do not clean it up to the landowner's satisfaction, nor do they sometimes clean it up to the county or the regional board's satisfaction as well. So, I mean, that's kind of a bigger issue right there.
So then what happens?
Well, then it becomes, like I say, a spills case in our...
Okay, but that's different than what we're doing here, right?
Right.
Okay. Tell me the story about what we're doing here.
Okay. What we're doing here is basically...
I mean, tell me the story. The petroleum guys go in and they pump their oil, and then what happens?
And they have a spill.
Okay.
Okay. Right now what they do is they take the spill material and they put it somewhere. Somewhere on that lease it goes.
Okay.
Scoop it up.
They scoop it up maybe with a backhoe.
And do they test it at that point or at some later point?
They're required to by the Division of Oil and Gas.
Okay.
They also file an Office of Emergency Service Response, usually. And if it goes in a creek, then even, you know, Fishing and Game comes out there, we'll run out there. So there's agency presence. What ends up happening is they scoop up this material and they put in these piles. Wow. And then the counties have been responsible, or even the Division of Oil and Gas, have gone out there, or even us, on situations and have said, you need to cover these stockpiles. Or maybe you don't want to put these stockpiles next to the creek. That probably isn't a good idea. So our idea to manage these stockpiles is actually to put them in a place where they're not going to be adjacent to a creek. It's going to contain all the stormwater runoff. So in that sense, we're going to containerize that. It's also an area to treat it, or if you will, not so much treat it, but segregate it to decide this has PCBs, PAHs that are above some standard. It has to be removed. You know, it's considered hazardous waste. Or it contains refined product, because that's another part of this whole story, too, is that most of the oil fields in the Central Coast region require what they call a cutter stock or a kerosene distillate or KD is another, or diluent, what else?
But that's not the stuff we're talking about here.
No, that's not the stuff.
What's the stuff we're talking about here?
After you get all the stuff that has spilled, you segregate it out, the stuff that's okay, if you will, for this beneficial reuse are these oil sands, where the crude oil has leaked into the sandy material. That sandy material, they may have to add liquid to it to make it more malleable, because it is very thick and asphaltic-like, some of it anyhow, especially if it sits there for a long time. It hardens up. So it would be this material that they use as a road mix, if you will, and then take that and apply it to actually the lease roads that are out there.
Okay, so they use this, theoretically anyway, non-toxic, non-hazardous material, and they make roads out of it or berms.
Right.
And then when they're done pumping all the oil out, then they leave.
Right.
And they have to remove the roads.
Who has to remove the roads?
The oil company.
The oil company has to remove the roads before they leave.
They have to remove it, scoop it up, or get written agreement from the landowner that they can leave it in place.
Okay.
If the landowner says it's okay with me to leave that road in place, then they can leave it.
Okay. So then that brings us, I think, to the next problem, maybe Mr. White's problem, mm-hmm. where they leave it in place, and the landowner, or maybe he sells it, and then they sell it. At some point, this guy winds up with it, not knowing that it's this
material. And at that point, since it wasn't a water quality issue, we don't think it's a big hazard to water quality. Why is it a problem for him, Mr. White?
Well,
Are there other problems with health issues that aren't part of our jurisdiction?
Not that we know of. The part of the process that goes on before that is the decommissioning process, in which county fire department, in the case of Santa Barbara County, would determine whether or not these reuse materials pose a threat to human health or the environment.
Okay, so that could be different than a water quality threat?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Because there are some materials that, let's say the separation between where they're placed and groundwater is, 100 feet or so. Okay.
Well, then why don't they make that determination before that it's allowed to be reused, if it's a threat, if it can be a threat to health?
No, it shouldn't be a threat. These materials, there are conditions in the proposed waivers that specifically say that these materials that are going to be used or acceptable to be used for reuse purposes may not be toxic, may not be hazardous, may not be, I believe there are even conditions on there for being toxic to plant life.
Well, see, what I'm having a problem here is, I mean, usually the staff, present something, and there's not such a wide disparity between what the folks out there are saying and what the staff is coming up with. And the staff is saying there's no water quality issue, and these folks are saying, danger, Will Robinson. So I'm...
Well, I
tend to go with the staff. I believe the staff because they're great folks. And so right now I'm a little concerned.
Well, let me clarify a little bit. In Mr. White's situation... His concerns are, in my opinion, or Water Board's opinion, are more having to do with the use or the remnant petroleum impacted soils that were never assessed, they were never cleaned up, they were never characterized.
Okay.
And the property went from being an active oil field facility into a residential setting, which shouldn't happen.
So you have a leaking underground tank, you had leaking above ground tanks, you had all these oil field sumps.
So that wouldn't happen under this program.
It shouldn't.
Right. I mean, murder's not supposed to happen either.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So that is a completely different situation, and we certainly wouldn't approve anything like that with these waivers. That's not the intent, and that's not what these waivers are for.
So even after hearing all these folks within their concerns, staff is still thinks this protective water quality and the negative declaration is just fine?
Well, the other thing, too, is to think what I wish we had we talked about getting a picture of what this is, but then we might as well take a picture of the street out front.
It's the same stuff?
It's basically the same stuff. It may be a little more gooier. Because it's fresh, but then again, too, part of it is you need to have a good workmanlike condition, and you would not want to drive on a road that had this goop come up on your tires. So, I mean, truly, I mean, you wouldn't want that. So, obviously, they would mix it in such a way that it would remain as a hardened road.
So, are we going to just reissue the waivers? I mean, if there's an active site, waivers for 5 years. What's going to happen at the end of each five-year period or the first five-year period? They're going to be drilling and active for more than 5 years.
Right.
What happens?
Well, that's really up to the board. Assuming staff proposes reissuing the waivers and the board wants to reissue them, then things will continue. If the board, for some reason, decides not to reissue the waivers, or if the board doesn't take any action and they just expire, then either these discharges would have to get WDRs, or potentially we could take action to require the removal of existing waste piles or roads if that was appropriate under our cleanup program.
Well, what did you guys think about with this? What's your proposal to us? I mean,
well, one of the things we
into 5 years, you anticipate something's going to happen.
Well, we anticipate that this this program is going to be very successful. I mean, that's at least my expectation. But what I would, and I believe Sheila mentioned that in the, I believe it was the supplemental sheet, mentioned that one of the things we propose to do is every time a reported waste discharge or an application for one of these projects comes to us and we approve it, we are going to update the board. We are going to do that every board meeting if appropriate. And during that time, it'll be a good opportunity to update the board on how the program is working, members of the public or anybody that has an issue with these projects and doesn't believe that they're working properly, they're certainly welcome to come and address the board on those issues. And we'll just play by ear in that sense. And at the end of the five-year period, if the board does not believe that this is a program that is worth reissuing a waiver for, then it'll stop.
I mean, maybe the determination, and that's the other thing too, the executive officer can discontinue the program at any time, which happened under the previous waivers in, 2001. We basically ceased all that. The other option is that we receive these projects, these individual projects, and then evaluate them and issue waste discharge requirements for each one.
Can I talk about the five-year? The reason that five-year limit in there is because the water code only allows waivers to exist 4 or 5 years.
The
enrollment won't necessarily end at 5 years. Presumably, if the board reissues the waiver, the enrollment will continue. What we expect will happen if this waiver is passed by the board, we'll get oil companies, and they'll come and apply and say, here's what we plan to do, here's our plan, here's where we're going to apply this stuff. They'll do it, and with the assumption that those materials will remain there for the life of the oil field.
Okay. And I know why the 5 years is there.
Yeah.
Right.
But I just want to know what you guys are proposing to do after the first applicant's five-year period runs.
Well,
are you going to reissue the waiver? I mean, if
we may get applicants that only start 4 years from now. The waiver still will expire in 2010.
This is a general waiver?
Right.
Yes.
So the enrollments don't expire. The general waiver expires.
And we thought this would be a way to streamline these project applications that have been received.
Well, I think we need to keep them under some type of regulation as long as it's an active field until such time that the property is sold. And I think that we need to be notified of that. And are there going to be inspections by regional board staff, or
yes,
is it something that the counties are going to do and just report to us at some frequency? What do you envision? Let's look at Santa Barbara County, because
right,
I don't know about the other two.
Right. Like I said, Santa Barbara County, we're fortunate in that we have counties that are active participants in the oil field process or oil field activities. We don't necessarily have that in Monterey and San Luis Obispo County. However, we have fewer leases that we would be able to inspect. So in that sense, regional board presence would obviously be targeted more to those areas than necessarily we would have to do in Santa Barbara County.
Dr. Hunter.
Regarding Mr. Ontivera's experience, which is very different than Mr. White, he's currently out there and observing and apparently in areas where these waste piles exist. How would this program address, for example, waste piles where they continue to contribute other and possibly hazardous materials? Are those inspections going to be timely or regular, or spot inspections? How would his situation be accommodated under this program?
Well, I think the first thing would be as part of these reports of waste discharge or applications for these waste pile facilities, the operator needs to tell us where those waste pile facilities will be located. That's the first thing. And we were not envisioning one in Santa Barbara County, say if you have an operator that's in San Luis, one in Santa Barbara, that they have one facility and they truck it. We were envisioning it that, and it wasn't just for the oil field either, we were envisioning more per lease specific. Or if you have two leases that are next to each other, maybe you put it between the two where you can move this to a centralized facility. So obviously if somebody comes out there and they see these piles kind of laying about, we'll know that it's not in the centralized location where they are permitted to have this. At that point, we can use, you know, it would depend on regulatory authority. We have authority under this program to regulate those waste piles. We could basically write them a notice of violation that waste pile should not exist. You know, it needs to be brought to the treatment facility. Or the county could do the same thing, say, in Santa Barbara County. So in that sense, it would be extremely obvious if you found these, you know, these waste piles were not being addressed. In terms of the reuse projects, again, you know, having the luxury of Santa Barbara County, where they're driving out there, or even Division of Oil and Gas, they're out there driving on the roads to do inspections. They'll know whether the roads are falling apart or they're not falling apart, or they need to be maintained.
So the Olivares property really is a special case. His property is the subject of quite a bit of cleanup. It's separate from the reuse projects. There are two specific locations on his properties where the cleanup is in charge, or the regional board is oversight agency, and the rest of his properties, the cleanup's being overseen by the county. But there are multiple places on his property where the oil companies have spilled things in the past, and they're still in the process of cleaning it up and making it right to his satisfaction.
Okay, Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Jeffers.
I'm going to run an idea by you and just, you know, tell me up or down if you think it's a good one or a dumb one. I have an idea which way it's going. How about allowing these are conditional waivers, right?
Yes.
These conditional waivers only in counties that have the county, the Santa Barbara type county oversight. And then, you know, where they don't have the county oversight, they've got to get a WDR or, you know, get the county to get into the oversight business.
And I think even if maybe we refine it a little bit more, where we actually say that unless this interagency agreement is in place, we will not accept.
I'm just wondering what you think about that. I know this guy wants to chime in, but I'm asking this lady right here.
Yeah, I can help on the answer.
Please.
Who are you?
I'm Ed Brennan with the Division of Oil and Gas. And
can you come up to the
mic?
Yeah,
come up.
Look like you're going to have a heart attack.
Yeah. Well, we're starting to go a little different direction. I just wanted to be a little bit helpful here. I'm Ed Brennan with the State of California Division of Oil and Gas, and I'm the district deputy in charge of this area. We do have inspectors that are on the leases in the Arroyo Grande field, the San Ardo field, you know, the various fields in the San Luis Obispo and Monterey County areas, and we have been participating in preparation of this program. And we've agreed that if we see things out there that do not meet the standards that are being established, that we will be happy to report them to the – well, first of all, we'll try and get the operator to correct them. If they will not, then we report them to the board. And so we'll help be the eyes for the regional board out there.
Well, I'm not sure I want someone to be our eyes, but
extra eyes are good.
Well, extra eyes are good. Okay. But that's separate than the Santa Barbara County oversight, right? This guy.
His region is larger than our region.
Is he Santa Barbara County?
Yes. He's Santa Barbara County, San Luis County, Monterey. Mm-hmm.
He's different agency.
He's not a county guy. He's a state guy. That's what I was trying to get to.
State agency.
Now, was this? Everyone was talking about how Santa Barbara County had something that Monterey County and San Luis Obispo County didn't have. Is that this guy?
No.
Okay. What's that then?
He's everywhere, but when I'm thinking of Actually, Santa Barbara County Building and Planning are very active in the oil field leases.
Okay.
As well as they have an energy division, but that's only for, like, offshore.
Then do you think that's a good thing, that Santa Barbara County has that?
Yes.
Would you like to see Monterey and San Luis Obispo County have that?
Well, they do have environmental health departments, and they do inspect oil fields as part of their duties with the what they call the CUPA, which is an enforcement agency for regulating hazardous materials.
Apparently, there's no difference between the three counties.
Santa Barbara County is more involved with oil fields than the others. The others do have the infrastructure and the inspectors.
They have the infrastructure, but they don't employ.
They don't have the huge oil field presence that Santa Barbara County has.
I understand that.
But they do have the programs and the inspectors.
And they haven't been very actively involved with this program, but our intent and objective is to
That's fine.
To do that.
You answer my question.
Okay.
Just forget that whole thing.
Okay.
But I'm trying to help you out. In
Monterey and Slo counties, perhaps because there's only three or four potential permittees, that we're probably better off just issuing that permit directly ourselves instead of trying to get a county involved.
Even Santa Barbara County will be enrolling in the regional board waiver.
Right.
Okay, but
so
in terms of monitoring and compliance and inspection,
we'll have the DOG inspectors in Monterey and San Luis Obispo counties, and we'll have the county health inspectors in both those counties as well.
But how do we know we're going to have the county health inspectors at this point when they haven't been involved in what we've done so far?
Yeah, I agree. We need to be meeting with them, making sure they're looking for the things that we're interested in while they're out there on the oil fields.
So perhaps before we allow those potential applicants to enroll, we make sure that we have an MOU with those two counties? Is that...
I think we can work on it. I'd hesitate to make that a condition right now because of the small numbers. I think we, in combination of our presence, Department of Oil and Gas's presence, we can keep an eye on the San Ardo properties in particular, which we're really talking about here.
Well, and do we have a letter from this gentleman from the other state agency so that we have something in our file in case there's someone that replaces him and he moves on, that we've got, that offer?
Division of Oil and Gas is going to be there as long as the oil fields are there.
Well, I understand that.
And Mr. Brandon has been involved in our workshops, right, and has commented on these orders.
Yeah, but if he decides to move on, mm-hmm, and someone else takes his place and has a different philosophy or attitude about, mm-hmm, working with us and being as attentive as he has offered to be, I'd like to make sure that he kind of laid out some policy that he feels should be followed that we can somewhat rely upon.
Well, and I think the best way to resolve that is to develop an interagency agreement with all these different counties whereby the respective responsibilities are clearly outlined so everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be responsible for.
And Ed would be happy to supply a letter like that.
Good. I'd really appreciate receiving something from you. Kind of.
We'll be happy to.
Thank you.
I'm still not real comfortable with it.
Because the plan is to enter into an agreement with the counties and Division of Oil and Gas. And actually, in that interagency agreement that was mentioned in the supplemental sheet for item 17, part of that reason is to actually specify what agency has what jurisdiction.
Okay.
And so it'll be very clear as to who's going to do what, not only for this waste piles, this management, but the beneficial reuse, but then there's the oil field decommissioning too.
Okay. Sheila, I'm not really assured that we're doing the best thing for property owners. That's my concern. And this may be not a related case, but I can remember a couple centuries ago on this board that we had some folks in here that bought property, had homes built on them, and had oil oozing out of the ground in their driveways, in their lawns, and so forth, and didn't have any recourse. Sure, it probably wasn't disclosed. I'm a devious person. What makes me think that I wouldn't go out there and dig a hole and bury this stuff
doesn't show up. I stop my process of oil and I turn it over to the property owner, and then somewhere down the line he's got oil or this goo starts coming up. What recourse does that person have at that time? What protection did he or she have? And that's what I'm concerned about.
I think you can ask Unical what happens when that's done either intentionally or intentionally. They're still in the process of going back into established subdivisions, finding old sumps, buying the houses and tearing them down. The oil companies do not have any incentive to do that, and that's why the oil and gas regulations are there, and Ed's agency is there to make sure that doesn't happen. When the oil company stops producing, there are a lot of things they have to do. And it's not just the reuse materials. There's many, many other things. In fact, the reuse material is probably the minor part of the things they're going to have to clean up.
I hear you, Harvey, but we also hear the horror stories that we get from time to time. I know we can't put something out there that's going to stop everything, mm-hmm. but here we're grappling with these issues. And I just want to make sure that the property owners are protected the best that we can give them as people that are, you know, representing the state of California. And I think that's really where I come from. And I know you assured me that, you know, stuff will be away from waterways and it won't discharge and all those kind of things. But, you know, accidents do happen. And then we go through this whole process. And it's a long, lengthy process. And sometimes property owners really never get total resolution. Yeah, sure, they cleaned the property up to a certain extent. But look at all the time it took for that to happen and all the inconvenience to the property owners. I don't know if you have a sure fix. You know, I'm willing to listen, but what I've heard so far, I'm not really sure, really assured.
I don't know if this is
the material will exist whether this waiver exists or not.
I understand.
And they're going to have to do something with it, and the option is hauling it to Bakersfield. And accidents happen on the oil field. They happen on the way to Bakersfield. This, I think, allows us to have more control over it than some of the other options. It's on active oil fields. They cannot leave the property without going through extensive cleanup. And Mr. Onaveras and other property owners can tell you the horror stories that you're talking about. And that's what we're trying to get around.
So it sounds to me like future property owners need some kind of notice as to what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, there has to be some due diligence on their behalf when they buy a piece of land, and they've got to look into how it was used. So I'm wondering if there isn't anything that we can record, which is just a notice of, you know, this type of a permit, and just stating what the facts are that, you know, we issued such a permit for this tract of land for this length of time. Can we do something like that?
We will have records of everybody that applied for this. And these are oil field properties. You can't ever hide the fact that this was an oil field.
I know, but...
Yeah, let me answer that because I think it's a legal question. I don't know the answer. I don't know whether we can record notices or restrictions on other people's properties. I am pretty sure that we cannot. So if that's something that you want to consider, we'd have to continue.
Lori, I'm not considering that. I'm not considering recording a restriction. I'm simply looking at recording a notice of the permit.
Yeah, I don't know if we can do that.
Well,
you record anything you want.
Maybe we could look
into...
Well, isn't that part of the disclosure? But, you know, we're not in a real estate business, but...
Yeah, there's problems with slander of title, and I don't know anything about that area of the law. I don't know... It doesn't seem like this would be slander of title, but I don't know if we have the authority to go around recording notice of permits that we issue.
Because that is the way, you know, in a title search, that would come up, and at least a potential purchaser is going to have some notice that something had been going on, and the burden would then shift to them to inquire as to whether all terms of the permit were complied with.
Could we ask?
I think that we could require the discharger to record a notice, or if any materials were left in place, a condition of leaving materials in place could be requiring a notice to be recorded.
We've done something similar with abandoned landfill facilities, landfill sites. We issue the general waste discharge requirements for old, inactive, abandoned landfill sites, and we did include a requirement for filing a, I think it was a recording at the county recorder's office, essentially saying, a statement saying that a landfill exists at X location, and that was it. And that seemed to work fairly well. I don't know whether legally we can do that with oil field facilities, but it's certainly something that we can consider for any materials or any leases that are where materials are left in place. There is some question as to whether legally we can do that, because some of these oil field companies have very long-term leases. In some cases, we were told that some leases are close to 100 years old, and they've got certain agreements that they signed generations ago, and now to come back and have to do a recording may be, it's a legal issue in my mind.
Okay, well, maybe Lori could look into that as an option here to include in what staff is going to do.
Requiring the owner or the operator to record something, or doing it ourselves? We're
doing it ourselves. A notice of the permit,
Mr. Chair,
or any other type of notice, if it's more feasible to have the property owner do it, then that might be a way to go.
Yeah, I think it would make a lot more sense to make it a condition of the order that that someone do it, the discharger do it. And I haven't seen the leases, and I don't understand what the concern is about deed recordations and notices that would impair a lease. I just don't know what the argument is. I don't have enough information.
Well, what I was going to ask, Mr. Chair, is to Mr. Briggs, what do we do in cases where we've had toxic spills in some locations? We haven't really closed it, but they have, say the property owner has capped it and made a parking lot out of it, but yet there is still not total cleanup. What do we do with that property? Do we put some restriction on the deed till it's cleaned
up?
Yeah,
we have had underground tank sites where...
Is this any different?
A situation where you mentioned where we have had notes on the deeds, deed restrictions, land use restrictions.
The difference, I think, Mr. Jeffries, is that these are still operating properties. The oil company isn't going anywhere. The water code says that before we can close a slick case, the board has to make a determination that the property is can be used for anything, any use. If you can't make that determination, there has to be a deed restriction. So, yeah, we do that when we're closing a case that has maybe some soil left in place and we don't want a well drilled there. We have to have a deed restriction. But the difference here is the operator is still there, still using the property.
So that's
and when he leaves, he takes all that stuff with him.
Theoretically.
And if he doesn't, then we're talking about notices to property owners.
Well, except in that case, it's a condition of closure in a cleanup. And so the way we can require the deed recordation, now it's statutory, and we used to just do it as a requirement that we wouldn't close a site unless there was a notice recorded or deed restrictions recorded.
Hello?
Hello?
Oh, sounded like you...
somebody beeped out.
Yeah.
Well, Lori, sounds like we might be able to then recording a requirement when the oil field is decommissioned and if any materials are going to be left.
Yeah, I think we could do that.
That sounds like a better idea?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
We can make it so.
Okay.
In the orders.
Okay.
Also, if I could get back to Mr. Jeffries saying that he's talking about
the theoretical devious person, not yourself,
yeah,
but someone could you know, dig a hole and dump this stuff in. Well, that, you know, if someone wants to do that, this program isn't going to keep them from doing that.
No, I know.
And
that.
If anything, if there is a workable, viable solution that is makes a little more sense than hauling everything to the Central Valley, it would probably mean that there'd be fewer incentives for somebody to do that kind of thing.
I would hope so.
So, you know, there's never any guarantee that someone isn't going to dig a hole and dump stuff in. Can't stop that. But I think this would be a step in the right direction as far as being a disincentive for people to do that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One more short question.
Okay.
When they're done pumping for oil or whatever they do, and they've got these roads and berms, and they're supposed to take them away, right, before they leave. And so where do they don't take them to the Central Valley? Where do they take them?
Well, that's a big issue right now in the whole Santa Maria Valley. Right now, City of Santa Maria has a part of its landfill that they're accepting these types of non-hazardous wastes. They're building a foundation for the final cover for the old parts of the landfill. A lot of it is hauled to sites in the Central Valley. Oil companies are still looking for better alternatives to that.
And the other alternative is the property owner accepts it.
That's one alternative. Another alternative is siting some sort of landfill closer to the oil fields themselves.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, any other board discussion, comment?
I actually have a question or a comment. I'm still stuck on the definition of discharger, which is it's the owner or the operator. I think what you mean is the owner and the operator, and I'm concerned that as drafted it's vague and we could end up with a situation where they're both pointing at each other and saying it says or. So I think that should be clarified to be and.
Okay.
Yes.
I agree.
In both orders. And I think it should just be the surface rights owner and the operator. I'm not sure that we have any authority over the mineral rights owner if they're not actually discharging. Okay. And then in attachment A, page 3, number 6, this is the provision regarding the decommissioning, and that they can leave it in place provided that the property owner agrees to accept all future liability, et cetera. Well, now we're also going to require a deed restriction, but I had a question on I think, first of all, it has to be the surface owner agrees to accept future liability, but I'm not sure who they're agreeing with. Because we're defining the property owner as the discharger, so they should have liability.
They're agreeing with themselves. Is that what you mean?
I think it would be the producer, the operator.
But, yeah.
But the operator can only leave it in place if the surface owner agrees.
Right.
And he must have to agree in some document.
Right.
So maybe that document also has to include his acceptance of liability.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And because he's only protecting the operator from liability.
Right.
At that point.
Right.
Okay. Anything else, Lori?
Yeah, and I would also, I still don't like this paragraph because it suggests to me where we're saying, well, I know how to fix it. Add a sentence after that saying that such agreement doesn't relieve the discharger of any liability that the discharger would otherwise have in addition to the liability assumed by the property owner.
Can you say that again, please?
I don't know.
Such agreement doesn't relieve the discharger
of any liability the discharger had absent the agreement.
Okay.
Or would have absent the agreement.
We can run that by you before we actually finalize the orders to make sure we capture that.
Okay. Yeah, and I'll look at the language, too, and I may want to change the exact language, but the idea is they don't, they're still liable to us and other regulatory agencies for the cleanup in addition to the property owner. And then the actual, you know, property rights and damages are between all the other parties.
Okay. How are we going to proceed, then, Mr. Briggs?
We actually have four different actions here.
Okay. Which should take us to the first one.
The first one is item 16 with the resolution and the order number. And for 16, did we have changes in the supplemental sheet? Or is that just 17?
No. I think it's for both.
For both.
Actually, the supplemental sheet of number 17 details the only one that's specific to 16. Is in the waste pile conditions attachment A, provision D14 will be reworded the same as it is in item 17.
Okay.
Most of the other changes are very specific to item 17.
Okay, so that's the only change for 16.
Well, discharger has to be also, the definition of discharger has to be specified on 16 as well.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
The definition of discharger has to be the same for both both waivers.
Yes.
Okay, so that's surface owner and operator, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And is that it for changes for 16?
The other change for 16 would be the same as the liability paragraph on the
I have a question. I have a question for Lori. Uh-huh. When you say the surface owner and operator, the discharger is the surface owner and operator, I think that might be a little ambiguous because a person might argue that they have to be both.
We'd say discharger means or the owner, the surface owner and the operator are both dischargers.
Yeah, that would be better. If you say the surface owner and the operator are both considered dischargers under this waiver. Okay.
Okay.
And then there was also, Hector, did you mention the change?
I was thinking about
17 yet?
No. Okay, actually, that was the only one. I was confusing the other paragraph that talks about surface rights. That relates to the same discharger definition.
No, I can't find it.
Okay, so that's it for the changes, and we can take a motion. For a resolution and the order for item 16.
For item 16, okay. Mr. Jeffrey, we need a motion.
Okay, with all the changes on R3 2005-006, I move for them.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And there's another item above it, though.
Actually, question for Lori. Do they have to approve the CEQA document first before, so the resolution R3200-5092 for adopting the neg deck before you adopt the order?
Yeah, you can do them one at a time. It's probably better.
Okay.
Okay.
We're looking for 092 now.
Russ, page 22 is another component to that.
22.
Two items.
In the blue.
Yeah.
It's resolution R3200-5092.
092.
Page 22.
Is that after 21?
Yeah. 16.
Didn't we just do that?
No. There are two parts.
There's two parts to number 16.
We did that, but the CEQA document comes first.
This is the negative deck we're voting on?
Yeah, this is resolution R3-2005-092.
Sure. You do the negative deck and then the order.
Or is known to the idiots, the negative deck, right?
Okay. That's what I'm doing right now.
Thanks.
I move approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed?
No.
Okay. And I take it there were no changes to the negative deck.
No, we'll search through the entire document, and if there are any items that need to be changed to reflect these changes that we're making to items 16 and 17, we'll do that.
Okay. Now let's move to item...
Wait, before you go on, I'm sorry, it's just hard for me to hear. You adopted the negative declaration and then the order.
They did it opposite.
Okay, well, just so the procedure is correct, why don't you have a motion to reconsider and then do it in the opposite order?
Well, how about if we just do the order again, because we just did the negative.
Yeah, go ahead and do that.
006. Okay. One more time.
I move to
accept
the order. 006. Is that right?
Okay.
Close enough.
Second.
As amended.
Second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, let's do item 17, Mr. Briggs.
Okay, item 17.